Hello, welcome everybody. It's so great to see so many folks joining us tonight. My name is Matthew Albrecht. I am the Executive Vice President of the Peace Alliance, and we're just thrilled to be hosting this call tonight with Hart and Jeffrey from the River Phoenix Center for Peacebuilding. They're doing such incredible work in Gainesville, Florida, and really around the country and further, but predominantly in Gainesville, Florida. And what we're going to do tonight is I'm going to introduce Hart and Jeffrey, and then they're going to share about the work that they're doing at the River Phoenix Center for Peacebuilding. They're also going to share about a really powerful immersion training that's coming up. Whether that's something you're interested in doing or not, you're still going to get a lot out of this conversation just from hearing about the incredible work. There'll be plenty of time for questions and answers, conversation. So it should be a great call. We're glad you're here again. And I'm just going to quickly introduce Hart and Jeffrey and then turn it over to them so that we can get all this great conversation rolling. So first I'll introduce Hart Phoenix. Hart's a co-founder of the Peace Alliance. Some of you may know that. She's also the chair of the Peace Alliance Educational Institute and president of the board of directors of the River Phoenix Center for Peacebuilding, which is a nonprofit whose mission is to provide and promote the best practices and principles of peacebuilding and global sustainability. The organization is guided by the life, inspiration, and activism of her son, River. Hart's contribution to peace is never lost on those fortunate enough to know her and work with her. With a presence of profound wisdom and, oh my gosh, there's a word I can't pronounce in this bio, sarvodiaphosphicuity. Sorry. She is quite literally the heart of a movement. So that was very kind of a canned thing. I've worked with Hart for years. I have such deep love and respect for Hart. She's been a phenomenal mentor in my life, one of my dearest friends. I'm so grateful for the space of this organization and who you are. I mean, just a really profound person. So lots of love for Hart. And then Jeffrey Weisberg. Jeffrey is the executive director of the River Phoenix Center for Peacebuilding and has designed, developed, and implemented a wide range of programs and services in Gainesville, Florida, and throughout the United States. His work with youth includes law enforcement youth dialogues, peer mediation, juvenile diversion programs, youth empowerment, and coming-of-age programs. He is also a founding member of the Peace Alliance and has served on our boards. Jeffrey's truly a force for individual and collective good with enthusiasm, acuity, and a creative ability to shape any conflict towards the gift that it can be. And Jeff has also been a really great friend of mine over the years and just a powerful force in our organization from the beginning and leading into this beautiful work that they're doing, which I've seen videos and I've seen Jeffrey in action. It's just a remarkable space for all of this incredible peace-building work in communities. And so thank you both for joining. It's great to have you, and I'm excited myself to hear what the latest and greatest news is and to hear about this phenomenal program that's coming up. So please take it over.
Great. Thank you so much, Matthew.
Matthew, I'm so full right now, I could just finish the call. Thank you so much.
And we want to welcome all the folks coming on to the call right now. We feel really honored that you made the time and chose to kind of be in this conversation together about what is community peace building. And we, Hart and I, had a moment of silence just to center ourselves and just feeling the incredible potential of each person to make a contribution and to connect with our own passion and wisdom and gifts, that really is the force for change. So we're just feeling some appreciation and gratitude and excitement to be sharing with you tonight.
Hi, everybody. So I wanted to give you a little bit of a history of how we started our center, because roots of it certainly came from our beginning time with the Peace Alliance and campaigning for the U.S. Department of Peace. And it just was so striking to us at the time that when we talked about violence and peace, I always thought of it as an international thing. I always thought of it about as, you know, the peace is the absence of war. I never really thought about it as in our communities, in our homes. And actually it was the Dennis DeSantis Department of Peace legislation that brought that home, that, oh my goodness, there is so much in our own country, in our own beautiful democracy, so many people that are yearning to be treated equally and to be helped to reach the high potential that just wasn't really happening. And that kind of turned our world upside down. And we were thrilled to be a part of helping to educate people and advocate for this legislation and for this change, actually a consciousness of humanity, to really uplift one another. After several years, we decided that we learned a lot. We learned so much through our advocacy. We learned about restorative justice and social-emotional learning. And we learned about ways that we could take some of the programming that we saw on a national level and bring it to a local community. Our community here in Gainesville is about 150,000 people with a huge university, and we thought this is a great place to test some of what we learned during our time with the Peace Alliance. And that's really what happened. We live here. It was more simple. We had stakeholders that are easy to get to in a smaller town. There's not that much traffic. And before we knew it, we started to plan this at our kitchen, at our dining room table. And for a year or more, we shifted our focus while we worked full-time in other areas to starting to introduce a strategy plan for ourselves, a timeline, and certain desires that we thought we wanted. We wanted first to offer our own programming, which was personal growth workshops, which would help ourselves and individuals to become peacemakers in their own life, to come to peace with themselves and to grow and to be able to blossom so that they had the space and room for the rest of humanity. And so we wanted to do that. We also wanted to build bridges of connection with the other organizations within this community that do such incredible work. But everybody is kind of in their own silo. So it's very important to us to make friends, to create relationships, to meet people and ask questions. What is it like to be in law enforcement? How do you do what you do in schools when there's so much, so many problems that are happening right now with teachers and with students and with discipline? How do you work that? Then we met people in criminal justice systems and courts, and we asked those same questions in the Department of Juvenile Justice. So we were able to kind of meet the people that had some influence and start to understand what it was they were going through and start to shift through our own minds and hearts what we had to offer as a gift. Because we are privileged. I mean, those of us, I think, that are on this call right now have the computers, we have the ability to reach out and the desire to reach out further than we have reached before. And that's kind of what we do. And our third thing was to create a translatable model, that we wanted to do this in Gainesville, but as a testing ground, and we wanted to create a Center for Peacebuilding whose main focus was bringing the best and next practices to a community in collaboration with all the other stakeholders and leaders. And that's kind of how it started.
Great. Thank you for that, Hart. The other thing that I think we've come to learn, and it is important for people to understand the distinction between peacekeeping and peacebuilding. And peacekeeping often has more of an international context when there is war and violence that different governments, frankly, would send in troops to help stabilize and minimize violence. But once violence and war was minimized or reduced, then peace builders need to come in and look at what are the different systems of governance, of economic opportunity, education, of mental health, and so forth. All these different areas need to be supported and inspired and resourced for ultimate peace to be sustainable. And so we really are looking at those areas ourselves. And what we've discovered is that the niche that we saw that was really lacking was around the most basic, which is communication and relationship skills. And another way to talk about communication and relationship skills is social-emotional learning or emotional intelligence. And that emotional intelligence is something that, as a field, is growing just tremendously, but it often is not taught in schools or in homes and in families. And if we can have the self-awareness and the self-regulation and the empathy to have right relationship, then we felt like that is such an important starting place of working with kids and law enforcement and other practitioners and adults within these coexisting systems. And if we could help support that development, that would be a major contribution. And we can share a little bit more about some of those programs and ways in which we implement that. But one of the other areas that we were looking at is the disproportionality of African American and minorities within the criminal justice system. African American youth and minorities have the highest incidence of expulsion and referrals in unemployment. Minority youth are, you know, sometimes double that of the white youth and population. And so what we were able to do is to partner with our local police department. And we were invited into a training for 2 days to really look at this, what's called DMC, Disproportionate Minority Contact, and to bring police officers and African American youth together. And so we created our own program in partnership with the police. And we offer a 5-hour training to bring law enforcement and youth together to really look at dismantling some of the bias and the stereotypes that exist. And what we found is that there's actually such incredible potential for new relationships that the old paradigm of policing actually called community policing, where police would walk the neighborhoods and they would know the children, they would know the parents, and when there was a problem, you know, some of them would grab the kids by the ear and bring them home to the parents, and that would be it. But we've moved away from that, and so in many communities, when there's a disturbance, the kids get arrested, or in extreme cases, unfortunately, children are losing their lives, young people. And so our approach and our initiative is really to support police officers to understand what's driving behavior, and that adolescents actually aren't fully developed in their brain development until about 25 years old. And then so you add on to that the challenges of trauma and adverse childhood experiences. And no wonder we have kids acting out and combative and disruptive. And so what we're really hoping for is that law enforcement can look through a new lens of why young people are doing some of these behaviors and to de-escalate those situations and find different strategies. And so we do a pre and a post survey, and we've really found a significant shift in a lot of the young people as well as officers. And one of the stories that I love is that there was a young man who was arrested by a police officer, and then we didn't know this, but both of those, the officer and the young man, were invited to this training. And during the training, we break up, and each officer is paired with a youth for dinner for 45 minutes. And these two happened to be paired up. And they had such a transformational interaction. And then afterwards, after the training, the officer actually ran into the youth who was out after his curfew, and he got him in his car, and he took him home, and that was the end of it, as opposed to actually arresting him again. So there's such incredible potential for law enforcement. So we've expanded that program to our sheriff's department. We now do it at the university. And actually, in the next 2 weeks, we're doing it at a different college called Santa Fe. And we just got some more funding on Friday of last week from Dunkin' Donuts to further this programming.
So that's just one of the ways that we are a part of what we call a comprehensive approach. So it's we're doing this, but also we're in partnership with the schools, bringing in social emotional learning and restorative justice. We're in partnership, as Jeffrey said, with law enforcement. We also are in partnership with Meridian, which is the mental health largest mental health organization here. We're part of the Trauma Responsive Community Initiative. We work with the Department of Juvenile Justice. So it's almost like a you know, bringing together the tribe or the a whole systems approach is basically what it is. But before we go any further, we've been talking a lot, and we would love to hear from anyone on the phone that either has a comment or a question. That would be really lovely.
Yes, you can push the 1 on your keypad, and that will raise your hand, and I'll call on you. So if you have a question or some feedback, push 1, and I'll let you know. It's so inspiring hearing all this. I already know it, but it's just like, you know, a few years ago when you were starting it, just like to where you are now, it's just like mind-blowing. It's so incredible. Let's see. How about Opulence? You're open. Where are you from?
Hi.
Opulence.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, you were live.
Hi. Hello. Lovely speaking with you gentlemen and ladies tonight. Hello, Hart and Jeffrey. Hello. You said something very, very insightful on this conversation when you said that the relationship between the law enforcement and the gentleman. I think that's what America right now is lacking. It seems that we're treating people in a way that is making them act out even more. When we talk to each other as we're, you know, human beings, and in a caring fashion, it seems to have a lot more effect on, you know, people. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah. I think I do understand.
You know, I mean, it's like we're, you know, when there's somebody that's done a mistake and everybody has wronged them, and, you know, they go in institutionalized, and there's nobody there that's helping them. And then one person comes along and sees a difference in this person. It's almost like it turns the light bulb off on, excuse me, the light bulb that's off. It turns the light bulb on inside of them to as a human, you know, and not just a statistic. It's sad. It's really sad what's going on with the youth. I live in a city where there's a lot of crime and there's a lot of violence, and it's because people are dehumanizing other people. I believe
exactly.
That in my heart.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your comments about that. You know, it really is true that we tend to separate and to demonize, and unfortunately so much of our systems and thinking have been that when someone is wronged or harmed, that we need to close it off, and that often it's a protection. And what one of our favorite mentors and colleagues, Dominic Barter, he talks about how when there's a harm, that he says, rather than being dangerous, conflict holds within it vital messages regarding unmet needs and areas of necessary change. So given this understanding, safety is increased not by avoiding conflict, but by moving toward it with the intention of hearing the messages within. So that's our colleague and friend, Dominic Barter, who does a lot of restorative practices around the country, but particularly Brazil. And so we bring that kind of thinking to this relationship between law enforcement and our youth. And the emphasis not only is on like some new thinking and new education, but also how do we humanize? And when officers share what it's actually like for them to take a wounded or dead person out of the car, or to go to a domestic disturbance, and if there's gunshots, or to a child that's been harmed. You know, the job is really, really difficult. And when the kids can hear some of these stories of who these officers are and what they've experienced, it really goes a long way to help reframe the lens through which we see each other.
So, yeah, well, do we want to go on with something else? So Jeffrey touched on restorative justice, and that is one of our, we just absolutely love it. It's a philosophy. It's a way of being. And it speaks to something that you just shared, Opulence, and that is that we don't believe that we are our behavior. We believe that if we've done something that has harmed someone, or we've done something that harmed ourselves, or we made a mistake, that's only a very, 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 very small part of who we are. We're also living life every day, and we're smiling, and we're celebrating, and we're mourning, and we're succeeding, and then we're failing. We're a bit of everything, and that's kind of the philosophy that we share with the juveniles that we deal with that are in jail or on probation, or kids that are getting kicked out of school, or teachers that are frustrated and are just not doing the job they want to do, or law enforcement that actually might have PTSD and they're just seeing so many things that are driving their behavior. So restorative justice is about bringing together, whether it's a crime or it's just a harm or it's a conflict in a family, all parties that have been impacted by whatever the incident was, and giving voice, letting everyone have a voice as to how it affected them and how they believe it could be made better, how it could change, made better, and not happen again. And we've been doing the most incredible cases right now with kids that are in domestic battery situations where they actually are the ones that are the batterers, where families have just been falling apart. And just watching the difference in 2 hours, 2.5 hours, from very, very serious offenses to, graffiti on the wall, just starting to hear what the impact was from someone who might have done the harm to someone that was hurt. They never get to hear that in the criminal justice system. In that system, it's like you did a crime, you broke the law, you're going to pay for it. They separate the victim and the offender, and therefore the victim never really knows if they were really like a target, if it was something personal. They never really get a voice. They never get an opportunity to talk to the actual person that might have harmed them. And in this kind of way, they are able to develop some empathy, and for each other. They start to hear the effect on the family, on the neighbors, on each other, and they start to realize, wow, I am not the only one that has anything happening in this situation. And it's a very, very powerful, powerful modality.
So one of the things that we'd love for the listeners to get from the some of the rest of this call is that the social-emotional learning, the police-youth dialogue, addressing what's called DMC, restorative practices, and some of the trauma work, is that what the immersion, a big part of the immersion's focus is to not only train people in our curriculum and the facilitation skills, but it's also to really develop some comfort and confidence of how do you build relationships and alliances with, in many cases, the unlikely bedfellow. And, you know, that Martin Luther King, one of my favorite quotes, is that we have no morally persuasive power with those who can feel our underlying contempt. We have no morally persuasive power with those who can feel our underlying contempt. What's so important about that as a guide is that in order for us to make change and make headway with people who are different from us, whether it's racially or economically or educationally or law enforcement and schools and gender and so forth, that we have to be able to have clarity of what is our own judgments, what's our own stuff that may potentially get in the way of us building relationships. That if we go into these interactions and partnerships with a fight or righteousness or, you know, you're wrong kind of attitude, you won't get very far. You just won't. And so a big part of the immersion is really looking at how to build those partnerships and alliances and what is it within us personally that needs to be understood and then reframed in a way that we can have a conversation, a dialogue, a partnership, a collaboration, again, with those who are different from us. Because in order to build these systems within our communities, we cannot do it alone. And the officers, the police, they say, we cannot arrest our way out of this problem. We've got to work in partnership. And so we're really excited to help train people in, you know, how do you build these partnerships and relationships and look at what are the solutions and what do we want to create together. There's a term that I really love called solutionary. And we didn't invent that ourselves, but we totally relate to it. That our orientation is not what the problem is, but what do we want to bring to the table? What do we want to create or co-create together? And that attitude, we believe, we learned that, frankly, in our work with the Department of Peace and in lobbying. But that attitude and temperament is really what is opening the doors to these agencies and institutions and structures that in many cases are quite siloed and closed. So that's one of the things that we're going to be focusing on. And the other thing is really looking at our confidence as leaders and facilitators and growing our capacity as these leaders and facilitators to hold the space for discord and disharmony and pain, frankly. And can we grow that ability within ourselves? And by doing that, then we help create the opportunity for people to come to a new level of understanding and outcomes to move forward in the way that they really want to. So let's see. I don't know, Matthew, if you have the list somewhere up on there of week one and week two, but this is going to be a very experiential training. obviously we do different levels of teaching, but our style of teaching is to really engage and call forth the wisdom that exists within the group, and then lots of practice of how to translate our own knowledge and new information into ways that other people can understand and comprehend. And I have had a lot of experience working with youth, many of them on probation and in the criminal justice system, and many of them minorities. And what is most important is our ability to connect deeply. And when we connect deeply, it doesn't matter what our differences are. We create an opportunity for relationship and trust. And that's another major emphasis of what we're really looking at, supporting people to develop that ability to speak different languages and to listen to different languages and to listen to what's underneath, if you will, the waterline, and to be able to create a level of compassion and empathy for you know, what often is not being understood in schools and with parents and in the criminal justice system. And in that space, we have a new opportunity for different behaviors and outcomes.
So we've been, people have been in touch with us saying, how can we do this in our community? You know, we really want to do it. Maybe we just want to do a piece of it. Maybe we want to do all of it. And just to say that, you know, this has been 4 years in the making. We started with one program, and we developed it. And as it developed, it caught on, and people came to us saying, would you do this? Would you do that? Things that we never even knew existed. We didn't really know anything about the criminal justice system or what was really happening in schools or what was happening on the university level. And yet the call came out to us from them, because there was an organization, there was somebody here that kind of put a stake in the ground and said, we're here, we're the Center for Peacebuilding, and these are the things that we do. And so what I want to say about that is that we decided to do this training as a way to hopefully start the ball rolling in other areas to have this kind of comprehensive model and this collaborative effort. And I can tell you that when we first came, you know, the powers that were here were not that excited, but slowly, and not that slowly, actually, very quickly, because of the way that Jeffrey was sharing how we see them, we were able to kind of understand where they were at and, again, offer what it was that we had to offer. So I just want to say that we work very closely with certain parts of the University of Florida in terms of restorative justice, in terms of collaborating with students and issues that they might have in their, not only with law enforcement, but with their where they live. And so it's extended quite amazingly. And so we have created this module. May 6th through the 14th would be the first one, and then we're going to do week 2, October 14th through the 22nd, for this in-depth residential immersion, which would be held on a very, very beautiful piece of land at a retreat center in the Gainesville, Florida area. And people are invited to apply, and we would love to answer any questions you might have about the immersion, if you have some interest.
So, Matthew,
Rachel,
this might
we
be
have one person that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we have one person that's got their hand raised from a few minutes ago, and then, so any questions, comments, remember you can push the one key on your phone. We have Hart and Jeff here, but I'm going to open this up to Dorothy. It may not be quite on that point, but Dorothy, you had raised your hand. You're live.
Hi. Yes, I'm Dorothy Joy. I'm from Ohio, and I am taking the class for peace building or restorative practices in justice in the schools. We just had our fourth class last night. My question is, does that training also apply to the judicial system like what you're talking about, or would it be more beneficial for me to have both trainings? This is all new to me, okay? I have been an educator. I'm retired, but I'm very much have always had a passion and heart for children, education, and families. But it was interesting that I also, last Thursday night, went to our community meeting here, and the guest speaker was the, I guess you would call him the magistrate or administrator that works with these type of juvenile delinquents and works directly from underneath the judge. And it was very interesting that the new council person knew I had just signed up for this restorative justice and circle class for schools. And when I asked for the business card of the presenter and went and got it, she whispered to me, she said, "I think this is a perfect contact for you." So it seems like there might be an opportunity for me, and I certainly want to go in prepared. So is it more beneficial to have both trainings?
Well, thank you so much for your question, Dorothy, and I'm not 100% clear. I think you're asking, you're involved in the Peace Alliance training on restorative practices in schools, and then, if I understand correctly, and then you're also wondering is, would it be beneficial to do further training around restorative practices and its applications? Is that your question?
Right.
And in particular, Jeffrey, I think what you guys are going to be doing. Go ahead, Dorothy. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I was just saying, clarifying that, yes, I wanted to know if it is important to do further training as to how that applies to the judicial system and within the community.
Yeah, well,
in particular, Jeffrey, I think around the immersion training you're doing, and would that be beneficial as an addition to that?
Yeah, I think I got that. Okay, great. Well, what I would say, Dorothy, is that the part of our immersion training is a 2-day intensive on restorative practices and facilitation. You're not getting that in the peace study or the restorative practices in schools online. You're not getting that same kind of training. So whether you come to the immersion or somewhere else and you want to further your skills in restorative practices, I would definitely encourage you to do a training that gets you the foundations of facilitation skills. And we will be doing a 2-day intensive specifically on facilitation, and it's much of what we're getting, I think, on this webinar are different approaches of how to apply restorative practices in schools and primarily. And then we will be talking about how we work with the Department of Juvenile Justice and the State Attorney's Office and law enforcement and ways in which you can grow that in your community. So that's an area that we're going to focus on in our immersion as well as the actual facilitator training. So hopefully that answers your question.
And will you be sending out a follow-up email for registration for these intensive 2 days?
Yeah, there is or will be a link on, I believe, on the Peace Alliance website, and also our website is called centerforpeacebuilding.org, centerforpeacebuilding.org, and on our website is a whole description of the different training modules and application process and so forth. Thank you.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I didn't have a pencil to write with.
Yeah, it's called centerforpeacebuilding.org. Centerforpeacebuilding.org. Great.
Thank you,
Dorothy.
Great. So next up is Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. Hello? This is
Mary. We can hear you.
You can hear me?
Yeah.
I'm excited to be on this call. One of my greatest dreams has been to be involved in being able to make a difference with peace with the at-risk youth and how we can protect them from being able to get through their adolescence without being able to be imprisoned for just, at that time in their life, there are so many things that are happening to them. I'm really interested in how we can protect the young people to be able to explore the possibilities of, becoming a human, fully human, without getting themselves in trouble and being sent to prison. So that seems to be my interest and how I can help them and protect them through this time in their life.
Thank you, Mary. That's beautiful.
You know, one of the things I love about what you're saying, Mary, is that I really do believe a part of our job as adults and peace builders and supporters is to help bridge this space between adolescent behavior and maturity, frankly, and
right.
that if we can keep our kids alive and keep them out of trouble, the vast majority of them will overcome the adversity of adolescence. And so it's a really important point that can we just create some structures and safety and opportunities and support, mentoring, so forth, for them to survive adolescence. Because I believe it is harder nowadays than it was, I'm 51, but I really do believe that it's harder now and more consequential than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Exactly.
So thank you for your passion.
Yeah, that's what I'm most interested in, is allowing these young people to make mistakes. This is the time in your life to make mistakes. So I just feel like we need to protect them and allow them to make the mistakes that they're making. And what you were saying before that I thought was so powerful, we are not our actions. We are not. That's not who they are. And at this point in their lives, this is the time in youth to learn and to push the boundaries and see what works and what doesn't work. But how do we do this in a compassionate and caring way where we're like allowing the young people to learn from their mistakes without getting them into the criminal system?
Yeah, you'll be happy to know that here in our county, things have changed tremendously. Now that these new diversion programs are being developed and so well received, the level of arrest has gone down 40% of juveniles. It's also they're getting civil citations instead. They're getting stopped instead of being arrested the first time around. They're not. They have two or three offenses, and that has changed the whole climate. That's just an amazing thing, and it's happening here. I'm sure it's happening in other places, but I do believe that it is, again, I hate to keep harping on it, but this kind of comprehensive model, it's because the school superintendent and the schools agree that they're not going to be suspending these kids. They're going to be offering wraparound services. And these wraparound services is that mental health is in place and the homeless coalition is in place. And we're there to offer diversion programs. And there are other great organizations that do wonderful things with kids. youth build. I mean, there are so many organizations that have the ability and resources, and that's what we want to do. We really believe that, you know, restorative justice and restoring youth and adults, for that matter. We work with adults as well. We work with organizations that when they are resourced in the way that is humanly caring, things change.
Right.
Period. I mean,
wonderful.
Great. That's thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Okay, we have one more from Nicole.
Hi, can you hear me? I had to unmute.
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Cool. Hi, you guys. It's so great to be on this call and be so inspired as usual. And I love, as you know, the work that you've been doing, you know, all the work with the police and the communities and the kids. And then I've heard that not only I, but some other people and professionals are coming and interested to apply this work in other areas of the world. Like for me as a medical provider, you know, seeing the conflict and the unnecessary lawsuits and the trauma that occurs from that makes me want to transfer this work to that. So I was just wondering what you guys could share about how this this immersion would be good for those of us who probably won't be applying it to, you know, cops and kids and that sort of thing, but other areas of the world and work. Thanks.
Thank you, Nicole. Thanks for that question, because I think it is really, really important for people to know that the applications of peace building is as wide and diverse as we are human beings, and that to develop some of the fundamental skills and abilities of communication and de-escalation and conflict resolution, you know, understanding what drives behavior, that application can be anywhere, truly. And the pioneers are you, Nicole, and others who are really looking at whether it's in business or in the medical profession or in education or in mental health or in the criminal justice system and so forth, you know, that we inserting ourselves within these various systems can be the catalyst that revolutionizes change from within. So it really is not so specific about, you know, the police youth dialogue or so forth, but there's aspects of each of these areas that can be translated to others. Because when there's a paradigm of power over, which exists within most systems, you know, we can find ways of creating the conditions for people to trust and to listen, and to innovate, to move forward towards a common goal. And again, that exists within all those different systems. So I love that you're raising that question, and I'm really inspired to see how you and collectively we can look at, in particular what you're talking about, the medical system, where patients and doctors and nurses and the workers who clean the rooms and, you know, other providers all have a dignity and a voice and a respect and strategies of dealing with conflict, because conflict is not in an isolated arena. It exists with all of us. And that's really what we're looking at, is how to support and to create more ease and understanding for all people. So bless you, thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Well, it looks like we're at a good completion moment. Just wonder if there's anything, Jeffrey and Hart, you wanna share to wrap us up? Any other what you just shared, Jeffrey, was so amazing. That's a pretty good one.
Well, you know, I believe when human beings tap into their passion and grow their gifts and go outside of their comfort to a degree, that is one of the precursors to peace. That if people are engaged and in service and out of the me-centered to the we-centered, that is what helps create the conditions for peace. So I'm just grateful and inspired by people being on the call, and whatever your passion is and whatever your gifts are, the greatest need is that we share it and to find ways that it can be received. It is my deepest wish for all of us on this call.
And I just echo that, and I'm so grateful for this yearning that is arising in so much of humanity right now. And to know that, you know, we read about all these terrible things, we see some terrible things happen, but the vast, 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 vast majority of human beings are kind and gentle and loving and really, really want to live lives that we're supposed to live. So, you know, let's lift each other up, continue to lift each other up through these different conversations, these phone calls, these interactions, meetings, and live in appreciation, because we are truly in a really wonderful time on Earth.
Thank you so much, Matthew, and thank you for all the folks who participated and listened on the call.
Yeah, thank you both. It's such powerful work, and you guys shared so much powerful stuff tonight, and we're all, I'm sure, really grateful for what you're doing and what you're sharing, and hopefully folks will be interested in learning more about this intensive training, and they can learn more again at centerforpeacebuilding.org is the website. It's also on the Peace Alliance website at peacealliance.org. But it's great. It's got a great overview of what you'll be doing throughout the course. Can you just share quickly before we wrap? Will you share the dates? Just share the logistics.
The dates are May 6th through the 14th, and the second week is October 14th through the 22nd. And in between that time, we'll be connecting with each other via Skype. We will be mentoring different people. And so it's going to be pretty amazing.
And there is financial aid that we're working on securing for people who might have some challenge with the whole nut, if you will. But we really want to share this work and make it possible for people to participate.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you both so much. I'm going to open up the lines and we can all say goodbye. So if everybody wants to say bye, it's time to wrap it up. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, all.
Thank you, everyone.
Good night.
Bless.